It's blazing hot outside. You get in your car to turn on the AC to get cold air pumping, but it blows hot air out. This issue is commonly caused by low refrigerant due to leaks in the AC system. You want an easy, all-in-one solution that will restore the cold air in no time. AC Pro Recharge Kits make restoring cold air easy for even those with zero DIY experience in less than 10 minutes. Save time and money versus going to a shop by picking up an AC Pro Recharge Kit today. Be a pro with AC Pro.
Hey, everybody. Welcome to another edition of the MLB Pipeline Podcast. I'm Jason Ratliff here with Jim Callis and Jonathan Mayo, and it is Top 100 Prospects Week. One of our favorite weeks of the year, I think, it's safe to say. We have been rolling out the top 10 by position lists, and that always leads right up to the launch of the New Year's Top 100 list, which comes out on Friday night, 7 Eastern, on MLB Network and MLB.com, MLB.tv, all the digital platforms. If you can't find it, you're not trying. It's going to be all over the place. This will be the 21st top prospects list that we have put out, preseason top prospects list that we've put out. Jonathan, back by himself, back in the dark ages, 2004, started putting out a top 50 prospects list on MLB.com. And here we are, 20 years later, bigger and better than ever.
You wanted me to name all of them, right? In really fast talk?
Exactly.
From start to finish? Okay.
And go. No, don't do that. But what we will do is we'll talk about some of these top 10 by position list. We did the pitchers on the show last week, and today we're going to focus on catchers, first baseman, second baseman, and third baseman. And then Jim and Jonathan are going to go head to head in a duel. They will be drafting a prospect team. They're going to draft one player per position, and they can and they're using the top 10 by position lists as their player pool, and they can only use each ranking once. They can only take one number one ranked player, one number two ranked player, etc. So we will see how they fare when they do that, and we'll wrap up with a question from the mailbag. All right, let's get into these top 10 lists, gents. Catchers. And I know in our story that accompanied this list, who was it that pointed out, who wrote this story? Jim, you pointed out that the last two players that headlined this list were at one point ranked the number one overall prospect in baseball, Adley Rutschman and Francisco Alvarez. And you think that we could have another player on this list end up number one overall.
Yeah, I don't think it's going to be any surprise if Ethan Salas is the number one prospect in baseball. I think he's one of the top candidates to do so by the end of this year. I think we're going to see a lot of graduations of the handful of guys who are ahead of him on our preseason, but can't reveal where everybody's ranked top 100 list. But yeah, no, I mean, he definitely has that kind of upside.
All right, so let's talk about, we did this last week. We had you guys talk about player that you think is most intriguing on these lists, and then a sleeper, a guy who's not on the list that you think is going to be on the list next up, however you want to categorize this. Let's start with the most intriguing player on this list to you, Jonathan. Who would that be?
Well, I feel like I've talked a lot about him, but Samuel Basayo to me is still, you know, is the most interesting guy. I think the only question about him is his catching ability, and the Orioles were pretty pleased with the progress he's made. I mean, we don't know how much he'll actually catch in Baltimore, given the presence of Adley Rutschman, but he can play first. But it's really the bat that stands out for him. We're talking a guy who's got every chance to be a plus hitter with plus power. He's super young, made it up to Double-A last year. I just think the offensive ceiling is through the roof, regardless of where he plays defensively. I think in another organization, he'd probably have a chance to be, you know, to be a catcher long term, even if he was never, you know, a great defender. If he stays in Baltimore, obviously they'll have to either mix and match a little bit, or he'll move to first base.
We should probably tell people who's on these lists. Huh?
Sure.
You guys are going to talk about the most intriguing and a sleeper pick who's not on the list, but quickly, the entire list. We've already mentioned the top two, Ethan Salas, Samuel Basayo of the Padres and Orioles. Jefferson Cuero of the Brewers is three. Harry Ford of the Mariners is four. Kyle Teal of the Red Sox is five. Dalton Rushing of the Dodgers is six. Blake Mitchell of the Royals is seven. Moises Ballesteros of the Cubs is eight. Edgar Cuero of the White Sox is nine. And Diego Cartaya of the Dodgers is number 10. All right. Jim, which of those 10 is most intriguing to you?
And we're not picking the number one guys because those are obviously, I mean, Ethan Salas is super intriguing. I think that's easy enough to say. But no, it's Blake Mitchell for me. I thought Blake Mitchell was a little undervalued in last year's draft, which may sound funny because he went eighth overall. He was saved $1 million versus slot when the Royals took him eighth overall. But you hear all the time, oh, high school catchers, it's a risky demographic. Don't take high school catchers in the first round. And I think that's too broad. And I think if you have a high school catcher who would be a potential first round pick if he played another position besides catcher, you shouldn't worry about him. And that's Blake Mitchell. I mean, Blake Mitchell can really hit. I think he's going to hit for average. I think he's going to hit for power. You add in the catching ability with a double plus arm behind the plate. I think he's going to be at least an average defender, maybe better than that. His makeup's off the charts. If he was a pitcher, he probably would have been a top two round pick because he was up to 97 with his fastball. And he also had feel for a curveball and changeup. And I think Blake Mitchell is going to have a huge first pro season. I think he's going to rise up the Royals charts and would not be surprised if he is the Royals top ranked prospect by season's end. Although I do acknowledge they have a very high pick in this year's draft, so maybe that'll play into it as well.
All right, Jonathan, a sleeper, somebody not on the list.
I guess I'm only picking guys who, like, we're not 100% sure they're going to catch, but I'm going to take Ralphie Velasquez, now of the Guardians. He was their first-round pick just this last year, taking 23rd overall. Another guy who can really hit. He's going to have plenty of power, left-handed hitter. I think he's got a chance to catch. He's a little big. And, you know, there's some concern about whether he'll have enough agility to stay back there. But he's a natural leader. He's got enough arm. So I think he'll be given every chance. But it's, again, that bat, he's got an advanced approach at the plate. He doesn't chase pitches out of the zone. So I think there's more confidence that he's going to get to his power. Had a very brief pro debut, hit well there. But I could see him starting to move relatively quickly, depending on whether or not the work behind the plate holds him up. The bat definitely will carry him up the ladder relatively quickly.
Yeah, and I'll continue that theme of guys who may not be catchers in the long run or everyday catchers in the long run. And I'll go with Austin Wells and the Yankees. I think he's going to get a chance to play in New York this year with Kyle Higashioka going to the Padres in the Juan Soto trade. Former first-round pick back in 2020. I thought he was one of the better offensive players in that draft. He has the ability to hit for average, hit for power. He hit 21 homers between four levels a year ago. He's not going to be a big base stealer, but he's had surprising success stealing bases. He draws walks. So he does a little bit of everything offensively. You might see an offense-defense platoon type of situation with Jose Trevino in New York. But there are questions about his receiving and throwing. Is he going to wind up being more of an outfielder than a catcher in the long run? Is he maybe more one of those guys who, you know, catches 40, 50 games and plays some first base and left field and DH? But I think he will provide some offense.
All right. I think this is maybe our youngest list too, the catchers. Three teenagers on the list and no one older than.
And only one guy, I think, Jefferson Cuero of the Brewers, that we have anointed as having an ETA of this year. Most of these guys will probably be eligible for the list next year as well.
All right, let's move on to the first base list. And this list is interesting because the guy that's at the top of it has made quite a jump. That's not the only reason it's interesting, but looking at this list, the Rays' Xavier Isaac hops up to number one. Kyle Manzardo, formerly of the Rays, now the guy we saw burst all the way to the big leagues last year of the Angels, is number three. Abimelech Ortiz of the Rangers, number four. Tyler Locklear of the Mariners, number five. Matt Mervis of the Cubs, number six. Blaze Jordan of the Red Sox, number seven. Nathan Mortarella of the Padres is number 8. Spencer Horwitz of the Blue Jays, number 9. And Hayden McGreery of the Cubs, giving Chicago 2 players on this list, is number 10. Most intriguing, who's not number 1? Jonathan.
I have to go with the guy who's already touched the big leagues, right? I mean, from last year's draft, as you mentioned, Nolan Schanuel, it's kind of insane. You know, we know the Angels move guys quickly and have over the last couple of years, but I don't think anyone could have predicted that Schanuel would make it to the big leagues as quickly as he did. In fact, I interviewed him for this podcast when he was in AA, and we almost couldn't use the interview because he got called up right soon thereafter. The approach is ridiculous. You know, he's walked more than he struck out pretty much everywhere that he's gone. He reached base in every single game he played in the big leagues last year. I think the only question is the power, and it's something that he has spent the off season. I got to catch up with him. We did a bunch of interviews with guys who went through the rookie program, and I talked to him for the Angels site, and he's working on adding strength. He's working on adding a little bit of leverage. You don't want to take away the approach that, you know, that got him to the big leagues, but you know, he's shown power in college. It's in there, and we're going to get a chance to see it in Los Angeles from the get-go, I would imagine, here in 2024.
Yeah. The guy who intrigues me is Kyle Manzardo of the Guardians, just from a standpoint of what exactly is Kyle Manzardo coming into the year, Jonathan. I thought he was a definite power. Definite hit over power guy. He's one of the better pure hitters in the 2021 draft. He ranked 2nd in the minors in ops in his 2022 pro debut. And then, you know, we got to see him in the fall league. He had kind of a tumultuous year. He had a shoulder injury that cost him 6 weeks. He got traded by Tampa Bay to Cleveland for Aaron Civale at the deadline while he was on the injured list. And we saw him in the fall league, and he was totally different, Jonathan, than what I expected. I mean, he was hitting for power. He was aggressive. There was some swing and miss. He hit 6 home runs during the regular season. He hit 2 in the semifinal playoff game. He hit 1 in the Fall Stars game. No question, Cleveland needs power. They had the least powerful lineup in the major leagues by a wide margin last year. So he just intrigues me from the standpoint of, you know, is he going to be a balanced hitter? Is he going to be the power over hit guy we saw in the fall league? Is he going to be, you know, honestly, coming into the year, I thought he was more of a 300, you know, top out at 15 to 20 home run type of guy. But I'll be very curious to see what he does in 2024. And I think a lot of those at bats he's going to get this year are going to come in the big leagues.
Hey, Jonathan, give us a sleeper.
I'm going to go back to the Pacific Northwest. That's where Manzardo was from. He went to Washington State. I think every chance I have to give Garrett Forster a little love, I do. Pirates got him in the 3rd round of this last draft after 3 really strong years at Oregon State. Had an ops over 1,000 there as a junior. Again, more walks than strikeouts. I don't know, maybe he's the right-handed version of Manzardo. I think he's definitely a hit-over-power guy, but there's some pop in there. And how good he may be at this next level may be dependent on how much he can tap into that power. He's going to hit. You know, will he have the kind of run-producing numbers that teams like to see from their first baseman? You know, added to this is the fact that the Pirates don't have much in the way of first base prospects in their system. So there's kind of a clear path. You know, with his advanced approach, he can move pretty quickly through the system and on up to Pittsburgh.
I'm just going to keep following Jonathan's lead with these sleepers. I also am going to take a hit over power 3rd-round pick from the 2023 draft. I'm going to go with Brock Vredenburg, who hit 400 last spring at Michigan State. Wasn't really a guy who was on anybody's radar. He hadn't done much at Michigan State going into the year. Had a great year, 6'7", 230 pounds, almost never chases pitches. It's more strength and bat speed. He is making some progress back spinning balls and launching them in the air, so maybe there will be some more power to come. And he actually, as big as he is, he can show you average run times, and he moves pretty well on the bases. So kind of a, you know, very interesting guy. Did not have a great pro debut. We'll be curious to see how he does in his first full pro season.
I got a question for you guys. Not related exactly to these lists, but more broadly, left-handed first baseman. Have the number of left-handed first basemen in the big leagues has it decreased over the years? Like, I was just looking at our past few lists, and there are only three. I'm talking about fielding, throwing. Three left-handed first basemen on this year's list. Only two last year, three the year before. Is that a thing of the past?
I don't think anybody cares about it, to be honest. I thought you were going to say left-handed hitters, and I was going to say not at all, because nobody wants a right-handed hitting first baseman. I don't think anybody cares which hand or arm a first baseman throws with. Because I was looking at our top 10, even though only two of them throw left-handed, eight of them bat left-handed.
Right.
So,
but why do you really care which way your first baseman hits?
Because you want the platoon advantage. Like, nobody wants a right-hand hitting first baseman. You hear all the time, guys talk about right-hand hitting first baseman as being a devalued, like that's probably the worst profile you can have as a right-hand hitting first baseman, because you have no defensive value and you don't have the platoon advantage most of the time.
All right, let's.
I'm sorry, I shot your question down very quickly.
I'm a former left-handed throwing first baseman, and growing up, that was always like seen as such an advantage. But I guess not.
No more. All right, let's take a break, come back, and we'll dig into the top 10 second and third base prospects in baseball. That's coming up next on the MLB Pipeline Podcast.
This episode is brought to you by Progressive Insurance. Whether you love true crime or comedy, celebrity interviews or news, you call the shots on what's in your podcast queue. And guess what? Now you can call them on your auto insurance too with the Name Your Price tool from Progressive. It works just the way it sounds. You tell Progressive how much you want to pay for car insurance, and they'll show you coverage options that fit your budget. Get your quote today at Progressive.com to join the over 28 million drivers who trust Progressive. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Price and coverage match limited by state law.
Welcome back to the MLB Pipeline Podcast. Jim Callis, Jonathan Mayo, I'm Jason Ratliff, and we're talking top 10 prospects by position as we lead up to the launch of the top 100 prospects list on Friday, 7 p.m. Eastern on MLB Network, MLB.com, MLB.tv. All right, second and third baseman, we are talking about the most intriguing guy on each list, and we're talking about a sleeper from each list. And I guess the first thing we should do is, again, to run down who is actually on the list that we're going to talk about. And this one's going to be second baseman. And the list goes like this. Number one, Tomar Johnson of the Pirates. Two, Jace Young of the Tigers. Three, James Triantos of the Cubs. Four, Thomas Sagesi of the Cardinals. Five, Justin Foscue of the Rangers. Six, Ronnie Mauricio of the Mets. Seven, Connor Norby of the Orioles. Eight, Juan Brito of the Guardians. Nine, Ryan Bliss of the Mariners. And 10, Carlos Jorge of the Reds. The most intriguing guy to you here, Jim?
Well, I feel like I talk about this guy every podcast or every other podcast, but I'll go with James Triantos. I think he's going to break out in the minor league season this year after breaking out in the fall league, where he was the offensive player of the year. He's always had good bat-to-ball skills. And in Arizona, which granted is a hitter's league, we saw him drive the ball better. We saw him more aggressive on the base pass. He was drawing walks. I think he has a chance to be a pretty complete hitter. He's hitting the ball hard. You know, the question is going to remain, what position does he wind up at? He's played predominantly second base in 2023, which is why he's listed among the second basemen. I think with Nico Hoerner in Chicago, and first-round pick from last year's draft, Matt Shaw, in the system, Shaw's probably going to wind up shifting over to third. The odds that Triantos plays second base on a regular basis for the Cubs are very slim. But right now, he counts as a second-base prospect, and I think he will hit wherever he winds up.
I want to talk about Connor Norby, the Orioles, because I think if he were in another organization, he would get a little more due and would have definitely touched the big leagues last year. I know the Orioles kind of ran a lot of young guys up and down, and Connor Norby wasn't one of those guys, but in AAA last year, where he turned 23 in June, young for the level, had an .842 ops at .290 with 21 homers. I don't know where he's going to play. He's one of those guys that I'm not probably the only one, but circled as like, well, is he a guy that they would use in a trade to send somewhere just because he's big league ready? There's at least average power. He can hit. He plays a decent second base. He's shown he can handle an outfield corner. He played a good amount of left field last year, so there's some versatility there. I just don't know how he works his way into the Orioles lineup, just because there's, you know, such a logjam of talent. But he's a nice little player who might need a change of scenery.
All right, let's go with sleepers, Jim.
I'm going to go with Jose Rodriguez with the White Sox. I've always liked him for a while. Like, he wasn't a high-profile signing when the White Sox got him originally, but he's always hit everywhere he's gone, 21 homers last year. He's probably more of a average runner, but he steals bases. And he's maybe, you know, he'll flash some solid speed, but he, like, continually steals bases. Last year, like I said, 21 homers in the minors. He wound up stealing 31 bases. He made his big league debut, got into one game. Did not get an at-bat, but he scored a run. You know, he's an okay defender at second. The White Sox went out. They got some depth players this offseason to kind of tide them over at the big league level. But I do wonder if by the end of the season, instead of seeing, you know, Nicky Lopez and Braden Shoemaker or whoever up the middle, it's going to be Colson Montgomery at short and Jose Rodriguez at second base, because he's almost ready for the big leagues and they need to find out what he can do for him. He's the future at second base for them, I think.
Yeah, I want to talk about Nick York, mostly because I don't think we should completely forget about him. You know, the star has faded somewhat after his, you know, big first full season, after he was kind of the surprise first round pick back in 2020 when the Red Sox took him in the middle of the first round. Then 2022, you know, he missed a lot of time. He had some injuries, didn't hit as well, made up for it with a strong fall league performance. And then he was in Double A last year and it was really streaky. Still showed some extra base ability, you know, some approach at the plate. And he was, you know, what, 21 for all of last season. So I think there's time yet. He's going to have to watch his conditioning and show that he can stay up the middle at second base. But because he's so young and there's still some offensive traits to like, I kind of picked him out as a guy not to completely forget about, even if he, you know, was once on this list and has slid off.
All right, let's move along to our third base list. This one is topped by the Rays' Junior Caminero, followed by Cincinnati's Noelvi Marte. Number three is Colt Keith of the Tigers. Number four, Kobe Mayo of the Orioles. Number five, Tyler Black of the Brewers. Number six, Brady House of the Nationals. Number seven, Curtis Meade of the Rays. Number nine, Aiden Miller of the Phillies. And number 10, Yoandy Morales of the Nationals. Let's look at the most intriguing player on this list to you, Jonathan.
Well, nepotism, right? I got to go with Kobe Mayo, my nephew. You know, I feel like I'm picking a lot of Orioles, which is fine. I mean, deep farm system and all. You know, for me, he has, you know, if not the most usable power in all of the minor leagues, it's a short list, you know, and he made enough adjustments last year where I think he's going to hit more than anticipated, and then a lot of people anticipated, and still get to the power. 29 homers last year, walked 93 times, had a 973 ops. This is while making it to Triple A before his 22nd birthday. So he's knocking on the door. Again, it's going to be a question of where they could find room for him. He's a big guy. He probably has enough defensive ability to stay at third, but he's played a good amount of first base and may need to shift over there just to get that bat in the lineup. But the power bat is what intrigues me the most.
The guy who intrigues me the most is Aiden Miller, who I think was a steal of the draft last year in the first round with the Phillies getting him with the 27th overall pick. I mean, Jonathan and Jason, you were there too. I mean, we saw this guy win the High School All-America Game MVP award and the Home Run Derby title at the All-Star Game in Los Angeles. And he was basically the best hitter on the showcase circuit all summer. Not saying he's a better prospect, but he was a better hitter last summer or in the summer 2022 than Max Clark or Walker Jenkins, who were a lot more famous and went to the top of the draft. But Miller broke the hamate bone in his left hand and missed most of his senior season. And you get teams, and I get it, you like to see the guy you're going to take in the first round going out and tearing it up. But because he wasn't able to play, teams are like backed off him a little bit. And I think the Phillies stole a guy who's going to be an absolute offensive force with the 27th overall pick. Sometimes it just pays to be in the right spot at the right time during the draft. I think this was a case where that happened for the Phillies.
Okay, let's take a look at some sleepers, Jonathan.
Yeah, I think there are a couple of guys that we could go with here. And I think I'm going to look at Brock Wilkin. It's sort of the next batch of third basemen that could sneak onto this list are, you know, college guys, advanced bats. Wilkin was first rounder taken out of Wake Forest by the Brewers. You know, ton of power, hit 31 homers last year at Wake, 23 homers the year before, the, you know, big power profile pointing up. Got off to a pretty good start and made it up to Double-A during his pro debut. 200 plate appearances, which is pretty good, and an 887 OPS. I think the power is very real. You know, he draws some walks. There's going to be some swing and miss, but another very intriguing corner bat, assuming he stays at third.
And for me, I mean, I'll just continue to ride Jonathan's coattails. This is my new strategy for 2024.
Life for life.
Yes, exactly. This year, we're going to try it out and see how it works. But I'm also going to go with a college third baseman from last year's draft. I'll take the guy who was taken right behind Brock Wilkin, Braden Taylor, who went 19th overall to the Rays. And he's just a very solid player for 3 years at TCU. He played for Team USA, was an all-star in the Cape. He was a hit over power guy going into last year. He started driving the ball more, set TCU records for single season and career home runs, played some shortstop for TCU, really fits better at third base, but he's rangy and athletic there. I think he's going to be a fine all-around third baseman for the Rays.
All right, that's a look at our top 10 second and third base prospect lists. As we record this, we still have a couple more to go, shortstops and outfielders leading up to the top 100 reveal on Friday night, 7 Eastern, MLB Network and MLB.com, MLB.tv. Tune in then to get more coverage of all these guys, Jim, Jonathan, and then Sam Dykstra is going to join us for a little post-game activity. We're going to break it all down on Friday. We are going to take a break here. When we come back, Jim and Jonathan are going to draft a team of prospects from these top 10 lists, and we'll see who assembles the better squad. And we'll answer a question from the mailbag that's coming up next on the MLB Pipeline Podcast.
Okay, picture this. It's Friday afternoon when a thought hits you. I can spend another weekend doing the same old whatever, or I can hop into my all-new Hyundai Santa Fe and hit the road. With available H-Track all-wheel drive and three-row seating, my whole family can head deep into the wild. Conquer the weekend in the all-new Hyundai Santa Fe. Visit HyundaiUSA.com or call 562-314-4603 for more details. Hyundai, there's joy in every journey.
Welcome back to the MLB Pipeline Podcast. I'm Jason Ratliff with Jim Callis and Jonathan Mayo, who are about to put on their drafting hats. Gentlemen, Jonathan, I'm looking at you. We're on Zoom. I'm seeing you. Acted as though you pantomimed as though you put a hat on. Jim, I'm assuming you're doing the same, even though I can't see you. Or perhaps you're actually putting a hat on.
I have headphones much like you have on, so I don't know that a hat would really work very easily.
All right. So what we're going to do here is, using the top 10 by position lists, and I guess we're going to give a little sneak peek at the shortstop and outfield lists that we haven't even gotten to yet.
Who knew that Jackson Chourio was good?
That's
who
right.
Knew? Jackson Holliday?
Jackson Holliday is making the shortstop list. Shocking.
You guys are going to draft one player per list. Is that right? No. You're going to draft more than
three
one
outfielders.
Outfielders. Yeah.
We're going to have a 10-player team with 8 position players, a lefty and a righty. Mm-hmm. But we cannot take a player from a ranking slot more than once. So we have to take a guy who's ranked 1, a guy who's ranked 2, and so on from 1 through 10. And this dates back to, I wish we remembered who asked it, Jonathan. Somebody asked us as an inbox question a few years ago, and I always love it. I think it's a great inbox question. So this should be a...
We've stolen it. We've commandeered it. We
gave him credit, whoever it was who sent it. He got credit.
We gave him
credit.
Thanks, whoever it was.
And we're just continuing to.
You know who you are.
Yeah.
We should. Somebody should look that up. All right. Well, this should be fun. And as is not normally the case, we've actually determined in advance who's going to go first. Random drawing, and that is Jonathan. And this is a serpentine draft. Jonathan going to pick first here in the first round. Jim will have the next two picks, and away we go. Jonathan, who is 1-1 in this draft?
I think the strategy for all of this is, you know, trying to weigh like strength of a list and depth with ranking. But when you're picking right at the very top, I think you need to take the very best player. And I'm not shocking anybody by saying that's Jackson Holliday. So even though the shortstop list, which has yet to be released, is very deep, I'm taking the best player with the first pick.
Jackson Holliday.
And that's an interesting one, because I was going to say, Jonathan, like I knew I didn't have the number one pick. And now like I don't have to take the guy who ranks number one on a list till later in the draft. But to me, there were three guys I thought I could pick number one. I don't know if you consider anybody else. You have Jackson Holliday. Like, you can never go wrong picking the best player in the whole pool. Like, so there's that. He's number one on our current top 100 prospect list. I think the best player relative to his position, and he's going to stay at the position, which you can't say about a lot of the guys on the list, would be Ethan Salas at the catcher's list. Now, obviously, he's got a lot farther to go than Jackson Holliday. I mean, even though he was in Double A, he's proven less. But Ethan Salas, you know, relative to the other players, his position may be the most valuable guy. And then the third category for me was the guy who ranks the lowest but could be an elite superstar talent. And that, to me, was Wyatt Langford, who's the number three outfielder. So did you consider anybody? Did you look at the pick very much? I'm just curious.
I'll never tell.
Okay, well, that's fine. But anyway, I will take Basayo. I will take Samuel Basayo, because I don't want to take Ethan Salas, a catcher. And also, this is where I compete, Jonathan. Like, I'm hurting you, a catcher, by taking Basayo.
You are.
Because I think he's far better than any other catchers you can take. Not that you can't make up for another position. So I'm going to take Samuel Basayo, who's ranked 2 on the catcher list. And then I will take Wyatt Langford, because I do think Wyatt Langford is – well, I we'll come back. We'll see. I have another guy I want who could rank low and be a superstar. But that was the way I approached it. So – I don't know who I would have taken if I would have got pick number one, but I will take Basayo and Langford with my top two picks.
All right. So two Orioles right off the bat. And that's pretty interesting, because at least based on the existing end of season 2023 top 100 prospects list, that means the number 5 player on that list is going to go undrafted in this draft, since Jonathan's already used his number one and Jim's got his catcher. All right. Jonathan, your second round pick.
This is where I started looking at, you know, sort of value with where they are. And, you know, the two lists that have not come out at the time that we're recording this, outfield and shortstop, are the, you know, from the position player standpoint, are the two deepest. And so that's where I started kind of weighing how I was going to do this. So I kind of went down a little bit on the outfield list. We're still talking a very highly ranked player. And I took Walker Jenkins, the Twins' first rounder. I went number 5 overall in the draft. We've talked ad nauseum about last year's draft and the 5 players who could have been 1-1. He's a number 1 caliber type talent. Had a very, very good, strong pro debut, making it to full season ball. I think he could move a little more quickly than anticipated. It's hit, it's power. Even has a chance to play center field, but even if he lands in a corner, the hit and power profile will really work for him from anywhere. So for me, I really thought that Walker Jenkins is value, because he's ranked 5th on that outfield list. Was a really good pick here. And then I'm going to take Aiden Miller, the aforementioned. Mostly because I'm
a terrible pick.
I'm a little bitter that Jim stole him to talk about his most intriguing third baseman. But again, this is like really good value. I think we're all going to look back and see that we, you know, have Aiden Miller number 9 on the third baseman list was low. And, you know, for the reasons that Jim already outlined. So back to back kind of value picks for me here in rounds 2 and 3.
Yeah, those it's interesting because like this draft would have played out differently, obviously, if I'd gone first and you had gone second. But I thought Aiden Miller, there's actually 4 guys who are interesting players at number 9 who are good. But Aiden Miller, I thought, was the best of them. You mentioned shortstop and outfield being deep. I think third base is also a deep list. And I think that's a great value. I kind of knew I probably wouldn't get Aiden Miller when I didn't take him with my first 2 picks. And Walker Jenkins was on my radar, but I would have to move it around to get third baseman. So anyway, after you make those picks, I'm going to go with Dylan Cruz, who, like Walker, Wyatt Langford, part of last year's draft, he's number 4 on the outfield list. Went 2nd in the draft overall, potential superstar. I find that when we do these drafts, Jonathan, because we have to pick 3 outfielders. Now, granted, all 10 outfield prospects are pretty appealing, but like the outfield, you know, getting 3 good outfielders or getting 3 of the best outfielders is always a good way to go, or at least that's my strategy. So I'm taking Dylan Cruz. And then looking at the left-handers, I've already used my 1, 3, and 4 slots. Or I'm sorry, I haven't used the 1 slot yet, but I'm getting confused. I know who I'm taking with the number 1 slot. I haven't used it yet, but I've used the 3 and 4 slots. So, and I've used the number 2 slot on Basayo. So that's taken a lot of the lefties out of play for me. So I'm going to get a lefty I really like who I think is going to jump up, and that would be Jackson Ferris, who I keep thinking is on the Cubs, but is actually on the Dodgers now since the Michael Busch trade. So I will take Jackson Ferris to position myself for later picks. And I think as we've both realized as we're doing this, there's no point in, like, when you pick a guy in the 1 slot, I'm not going to pick a guy in the 1 slot. And when you pick a guy in the 2 slot,
we can wait.
You know, yeah. So it's like there's some that strategy too. So I'm guessing now that you will pick somebody. Your next 2 picks will probably be in slots 6, 8, or 10, based on how this has gone. Because there's no reason to pick in the other slots. And Jackson Ferris was 7.
Yeah, real Nostradamus over here.
Yeah. Well, you're not wrong. You know, and we're getting close to the point now, you know, just looking at the draft board, that I think we're not going to get in each other's way too much. So I'm kind of, this is one of my last opportunities to potentially get in your way. You know, there's some outfielders still out there because it's a deep list, kind of, you know, we have certain picks still available. So I think I'm going to go with back-to-back outfielders. We've been rating that the 2023 draft class a lot, so I'm going to go one more. I'm going to take Max Clark, and that gets he's at the number 6 on the outfield list. You know, the Tigers took him, didn't perform quite as well as Walker Jenkins when he got to full season ball, but such a small sample size, the tools are ridiculous. And then in, I guess, we're now at the top of round 5. Yep. I'm going to go to Pete Crow Armstrong, ready to hit the big leagues full time, gold glove caliber center fielder, chance to be a very, very good all around player. Again, playing on the fact that outfield list is very, very deep. So knocking off my 6 and 8 slot there.
And now I believe, if I'm looking at this correctly, we're kind of locked into what, like, you can't draft, like, the only slot we can, and I'm going to take a guy in slot 10, so it doesn't, I can execute the rest of what I want, but like the 10th slot is the only slot where we both don't have a pick. And then based on the positions we've drafted, I don't even think we can really draft guys that the other guy might want. Like, it's possible,
yeah, I think that's right.
You could back somebody into a corner. I don't know if this is going to upset your whole draft, Jonathan, but I'm going to use the number 10 slot, which is wide open right now. And I one of the things with this is, unless you spend a premium pick, which I didn't want to do on first base or second base, because those guys don't rank high on the prospect list, I just decided I was going to take whoever I get at first base and second base, and I'll try to make the rest of my team as strong as possible. So I don't know if you had this in your mock draft, Jonathan or Jason. I'm taking Hayden McGeary of the Cubs, the number 10 first baseman. And then I'm going to take Juan Brito of the Guardians, who's ranked eighth among second basemen, as my first baseman and second baseman. I actually went back and forth and considered whether I wanted to go McGeary Brito or Nathan Martorella, Carlos Jorge, or there was a way I could have skipped on Ferris and gone with Connor Norby at second, but I will go with the Hayden McGeary Juan Brito combo here. And if this was like the amateur draft, Jonathan and Jason, I would be saving money on these picks to go over slot on my next guys. So very exciting. We have exciting picks ahead.
All right, Jim, do I get credit if I had Brito and McGeary in the other in the reverse order?
No, you get no credit.
No credit.
No credit. Tough. Got to get the round right.
I mean, usually when we do mocks, like for the regular draft, if a team's got multiple picks and we get at least a half a point.
You didn't have McGeary and Brito anyway. I'm expressing skepticism.
Oh, okay. So you're going to call out skepticism. Karnak, the magnificent here. Okay. I think, as Jim hinted, we're at a point now, I think, where we can kind of pick who we want to pick. And then it's just a question of, figuring out which positions I want to prioritize. I think I had an opposite approach in terms of the position. It was sort of position scarcity where I wanted to get one of the top couple of guys in some of those weaker positions. I'm going to do that in the next few rounds. But right now, I'm going to decide to get my lefty, and that's Robbie Snelling, who's third the left-handed list. And I was pretty sick. I was a little surprised that you went and took Ferris when you did, just because I thought there were other options that would have made more, that could have made sense. But again, only having the one pick per spot. But Snelling, super young out of the 2022 draft, high schooler, made it to double A as a 19-year-old. He's going to be 20 for all this year. Three above average to plus pitches with above average control. He's big and strong. He makes adjustments. I think he's going to reach another gear this year. So I was really happy to get him there. And then I went to the position scarcity front, and I took Kyle Manzardo from the first baseman list. Guardians got him from the Rays, as we know. As we talked about earlier, this is a guy who had a hit over power profile, and the power really started to show up in the fall league. I'm hoping it continues, and probably going to see it in Cleveland at some point this year.
I'm feeling like maybe I should have talked about players I don't like as much, and maybe you would have drafted them, since you took Aiden Miller and Kyle Manzardo. I should have talked about other guys.
Well, this is the first part of the podcast. You rode my coattails. Now I'm riding yours.
I guess I'm doing your scouting work for you. So here's my decision point here, and I've gone back and forth. I have my one slot and my nine slot open. I've got outfield spot open, and I've got a right-handed pitcher spot open. So I can go, if I want to go outfielder in the one spot, I can go Jackson Churio, and then I can take Dylan Lesko in the nine spot as my right-handed pitcher. And I think Lesko, now that he puts the Tommy John further behind him, is going to fly up our charts in 2024. I think he might, when we look back, he might be the best pitcher out of his draft. Or I could take Paul Skeens, who's the top pitching prospect in the game, and go with Colton Cowser as the outfielder in the number nine slot, because the outfield spot's deep. I am going to go Dylan Lesko here. I'm going to take Dylan Lesko with my seventh round pick.
Correct.
And then we're going to slot Jackson Churio down like the Angels did to Mike Trout in 2009. We're just going to push him down the board because we can get him where we want him. So we're going to take Brady House at third base. House really came on last year when he was healthy. I think there's going to be big time power there. I think he's going to be a good third baseman, all around third baseman. So very pleased to get Brady House. I think I did want Aiden Miller. I think Aiden Miller at nine is a tremendous value, like you said, Jonathan. But I also like Brady House at six among the third basemen. And unlike most of the third basemen ranked ahead of him, I think he's actually going to stay at the position too.
I think Lesko could be a big value at nine also. So he may be the Aiden Miller of the pitching set. We'll have to see. So I have left, I need a catcher, I need a second baseman, and I need my right-handed pitcher. And I have the number, my number four, my number seven, and my number 10 spots. So, you know, in preparing for this, I did put together, you know, kind of a wish list of sorts. And I did have Harry Ford as my catcher. So I'm going to take Harry Ford as my catcher. That takes up the number four spot. I love the bat. I love the athleticism. I love the desire to stay behind the plate, which he's going to be able to do. He was a little worn out when we saw him in the fall league, but super young, made it to double A, you know, very bullish on Harry Ford. So happy to get him there. And second base was, you know, a little tough to have a much of a wish list, but I was looking at Connor Norby, so I'm going to take him here. This time I'm not riding on your coattails. I'm taking the guy that I talked about, but you know, talented guy. He can play second. He can play the outfield. That doesn't really matter for these purposes, but I think he can really hit with a good amount of pop. He's done it at the upper levels. He's ready for a big league opportunity now, and hopefully that will come, if not in Baltimore, then maybe someplace else if the right deal arises. But happy to get two up the middle guys there.
Yeah, I knew you liked Harry Ford. I was curious. I was wondering if you might go Andrew Painter, if you might gamble on Andrew Painter returning to health.
Thought about it.
He's there.
I definitely thought about it, yeah. I think I liked the catching options better, higher.
So you could have coattailed it again and gone Blake Mitchell. I tried to help you out.
Yeah, like, yeah.
I tried. Anyway, I've got two picks left, and we'll have to go over slot here in the ninth and the tenth round. I'm going to take Marcelo Meyer of the Red Sox. I think that's a good value as the number five shortstop. I really do think the shoulder injury he had last year hampered him. He was off to a great start before that. I think he's going to bounce back. And then Jonathan, you got, we can't give away the new list, but you got the number one player on our end of 2023 list in Jackson Holliday. And I will use my 10th rounder on the number two player on that list, Jackson Churio of the Brewers. So happy how that worked out.
Yeah. You are giving away that he's the number one outfielder, though.
That's okay.
Yeah.
Why you have to, if people are keeping score at home, they're marking.
You made a big deal out of whether or not you were going to do Lesko and Churio at 9-1. So like,
yeah, that's what I'm saying. Yeah. Like they have to keep score. Fun. So they know.
So that leaves me with really only one player in one spot, right? I need a right-handed pitcher and then my 10th spot. So that leaves me with Noble Meyer. I'm totally good with that. High upside high school right-hander taken by the Marlins in the first round last year. You know, I love the pitchability and the upside. I think he has a chance to be a really, really good starting pitching prospect. And it wouldn't surprise me if he is a guy who floats up to the top half of that right-handed pitching list, you know, after he gets a full season under his belt and shows what he can do at the pro level.
All right. Well, there we have it. Team Jonathan, Harry Ford, Kyle Manzardo, Connor Norby, Aiden Miller, Jackson Holliday, Walker Jenkins, Pete Crow Armstrong, Max Clark, Robbie Snelling, Noble Meyer. That's a nice squad, Jonathan. Congratulations. I like the thought of seeing Jenkins and Clark in the same outfield.
Yes.
And when you have Pete Crow Armstrong with those guys flanking him, that's a fun outfield. Jim's team, Basayo, Hayden McGreary, at first, second base in a mock killing pick, Juan Brito. third base is Brady House, Marcelo Meyer at short, outfield of Wyatt Langford, Jackson Churio, and Dylan Cruz. Man, that's nice too. And then pitching staff of Dylan Lesko and Jackson Ferris. All right, we'll put those teams out there and let you, the listeners, decide who got the best team. I'm not going to choose.
And then we'll of course in 2044.
Yeah, we'll come back.
Our grandchildren are doing the podcast. we'll have them add up the war and see who had the most wins above replacement in the long run.
For sure. All right. Let's wrap this up with a question from the mailbag. And this one comes from Hugh. Hugh, with several underscores, it looks like, for a Twitter handle, asks, why has the buzz around Dylan Cruz faded? He seems to have been leapfrogged in most rankings. Huh. I have to say, Hugh, I didn't even know that the buzz around Dylan Cruz had faded.
Yeah, you answered the question right there, Jason. You know, our rankings obviously have not come out yet. The outfield list has not come out, nor has the top 100. I think you nailed it. His star has not faded at all. There are a couple other guys who may make their way ahead of him just based on how they perform, but I don't sense any buzz fading. Do you, Jim?
No, I think what it is, honestly, you know, you look at the guy he was neck and neck with in the draft, you know, played the same position in the same conference, faced off for the national championship, Dylan Cruz, Wyatt Langford. And I think there's been a lot of buzz about Wyatt Langford because he came into pro ball. He got all the way up to AAA. He had 360. He had 10 homers. He had 12 steals in 44 games. There was even talk, which as much as I thought I like Wyatt Langford, I thought was ridiculous, that when Adolis Garcia got hurt in the World Series, hey, they should activate Wyatt Langford and put him on the World Series roster. So there was a lot of Wyatt Langford chatter. Like, his pro debut is one of the best pro debuts we've seen from a draft pick in a while. Like, I mean, that's a fabulous pro debut. And meanwhile, Dylan Cruz, whose star is, you know, not really fading, he got to double A and he had 292 with an 844 ops, and he had 5 homers and 4 steals in 35 games. So I think it's just that Wyatt Langford was so good in his debut. And then you even had that World Series buzz, as nonsensical as it really was, that came up, that maybe that's what fuels Hugh's perception that the buzz is fading on Dylan Cruz. But regardless of what order we rank the outfielders in, and again, if people just listen to the draft, we said what order, what number everybody was, so you could put it together. Even if he had a couple guys move ahead of him on the list, I don't think I'm giving away, you know, too much by saying, you know, Dylan Cruz is still one of the top 6, 7, 8 prospects in baseball. So I don't think his star has faded at all. But I just think Wyatt Langford has gotten more hype since they've been in pro ball because that debut was so spectacular.
Right.
So I think that's all.
Yeah, it's more that Wyatt Langford's buzz is louder. Cruz may be about the same.
Cruz's same volume. Wyatt Langford's got turned up a little bit.
All right, Hugh, thanks very much for that question. And thanks to everybody for listening. That's going to be a wrap for this week's MLB Pipeline podcast. Don't forget to subscribe on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, or wherever you get your podcasts so you don't miss an episode. If you're enjoying the show or have any suggestions, leave us a rating and a review. Thanks, everybody. See you next week.